This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning together with Philip C. But now we turn to a company that is also facing another crisis. And I think this one is rather stellar. And this is the Evergrande crisis. Because sources have told Bloomberg that China's Ministry of Housing and Urban Rural Development have stepped up and is boosting its oversight on the Evergrande Group's bank accounts.
I mean, all this is necessary because, as you said, it's truly stellar, but necessary to protect funds earmarked for housing projects from being diverted to creditors. Now, they say that the developers' funds must first be used for construction to ensure project delivery. Now, holders of Evergrande Group's dollar bonds have been left on edge after several of them said they hadn't received a coupon payment that was due last Thursday. Meanwhile, staff at the firm's EV haven't been paid, and European banks are trying to reassure investors that their exposure is limited.
Yeah, so, you know, what are the consequences should Evergrande fail? Can it actually even get itself out of this mess? So for more on this, we have on the line with us Alfredo Montufar-Hello, who is the director of the Economist Intelligence Corporate Network in Beijing. Good morning, Alfredo. Thanks for joining us. Now, before we dive into the aftermath of this situation, I mean, what were the driving factors that led to this property company or conglomerate to amass such huge debt in the first place?
Thank you for having me. And I think there are three aspects to consider here. Firstly, what we are seeing today is the result of years of aggressive expansion fueled on debt, which saw Evergrande's total liabilities balloon from about 84 billion renminbi in 2010 to 615 billion renminbi in 2015. And we are now talking about liabilities of almost 2 trillion renminbi, or over 300 billion US dollars. And as a result of which, the company not only became one of the largest real estate developers in China and the world, but also diversified into other sectors through a series of significant acquisitions of non-core assets. The Evergrande of today is not a real estate company. And as you said, it's a conglomerate with wide-ranging business interests in sectors such as new energy vehicles, agribusiness, and even football. Now, the second factor to consider is that the majority of the debt Evergrande has acquired is short-term. But property projects are illiquid assets. It takes time to build and sell them. And because of this liquidity mismatch, Evergrande has had to rely on a business model which depends on selling properties years before they are completed to generate cash from buyers' deposits. Cash that is used to pay short-term maturing debt and which allowed it to take on more debt to continue developing properties. And this leads me to the third aspect, which is the government's decision to step up the deleveraging of the property sector through three red line debt policies that it introduced in 2021, and which put a 70% cap on liabilities to assets and 100% cap on net debt to equity. And more importantly, this also mandated levels of cash that are at least equivalent to short-term debt. So this has led Evergrande and other developers, which are also troubled, to cut prices to offload unsold housing stock and to offer discounts on pre-sales with the aim of raising money to repay debt and continue funding construction. But rather than helping, this has actually hurt confidence among prospective buyers and caused a decline in property sales in September.
I mean, you said just now 3 trillion renminbi debt, 300 billion US dollar debt, right? How do you rate Evergrande's chances of pulling a rabbit out of the hat and being able to negotiate a deal with its creditors?
Well, I would imagine creditors are definitely interested in reaching an agreement to prevent the company from defaulting. But events past week suggest that this will not be easy. Evergrande was able to reach an agreement with its creditors to avoid missing an interest payment on a renminbi-denominated bond, which was due on 23 September. But it actually missed the interest payment for a dollar-denominated bond, which was also due that day and which amounted to about $84 million. Now it has a 30-day grace period to pay this before it's declared in default. Now, this Wednesday this week, Evergrande has another interest payment for an offshore bond, which amounts to about $48 million. If it misses this payment, I think this will really hurt the confidence of international investors on the company's ability not only to repay its debt, but to survive. At the same time, I agree with what has been said by other analysts that Evergrande is more interested in reaching agreement with its domestic creditors. And this is basically because the great majority of its debt is in China. Its cash-making business is in China. And the company does not want to further anger authorities by triggering social discontent because of not repaying what it owes to its suppliers and home buyers.
Now, the Chinese government has been rather vague in its approach to this issue without any indication that whether it will bail out Evergrande. What's your take, actually, at the end of the day? What would they do?
Well, our view at the Economist Intelligence is that the Chinese government will not allow Evergrande to collapse. And this is basically for two main reasons. First is that this would risk triggering systematic contagion at a time in which the economy continues being disrupted by COVID-19. And second is avoiding social instability. Because on the one hand, a collapse would weaken further consumer confidence and could lead to a fall in housing prices, which would then impact people's wealth. By some estimates, housing makes up to 3/4 of household wealth in China. Now, on the other hand, according to estimates, Evergrande owes up to 1.6 million unfinished apartments to home buyers, as well as billions of renminbi in wealth management products, which it sold to credit investors that don't really have the good credit profile for this and enough financial literacy to understand what risk they were getting into. But this does not mean that Evergrande will be completely bailed out. The government is wary about exacerbating moral hazards in the property sector, which would run opposite to its efforts to deleverage and reduce financial risks, stop speculation, and make housing more affordable. Instead, the government is likely to broker a partial bailout for assets most connected with social stability. So the examples of other financially troubled companies suggest that the government could ultimately take control over Evergrande. A creditor committee would be established to help restructure its debt. Its Evergrande's non-core assets would be liquidated. And state-owned companies could absorb the salvageable parts of its business and take over unfinished real estate projects.
Just for a quick last question. So does this mean that at the end of the day, you don't think that Evergrande is going to be China's Lehman moment?
Well, I don't think China Evergrande is going to be China's Lehman moment because, you know, everyone said the same about what happened to Baoshan Bank and also to companies such as H&A and Anbank when they became troubled financially and when the government started trying to restructure their debt. So everyone has been talking about the China Lehman moment coming and it never arrives. The government has been able to release policies that are effective in containing the risks of the of systemic contagion. And so I believe the government has the capacity to do the same in the Evergrande situation.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Alfredo Montufar-Hello, who is the director of the Economist Intelligence Corporate Network in Beijing, giving us his views on the Evergrande situation. And it doesn't look like it's going to be a Lehman Brothers situation for China. Mm. Not for the moment.
Not so grand, though. I think the whole experience generally, I mean, property sector accounts for 15% of China's GDP. I think this will have long-term repercussions. And, you know, if he's going to say that they're going to prioritize domestic investors, right, what do foreign investors think about future investments into China, right? If that's going to happen and transpire.
Yeah, we're going to see a lot of repercussions actually from this Evergrande situation. And we're really actually seeing in terms of share price performance, not just in China, but actually overseas. So, for example, US industrials, because so much of what they export goes to China, what is the impact going to be like from their sales? Even European miners for that matter. So I think we'll be following this situation closely. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.